Ladies and gentlemen, Thursday, week two, college football is rolling. NFL is back tonight. College football gods kind of did the NFL a solid, and they said, hey, we won't have 30 amazing games. We'll only have 10, maybe 15, maybe 20. Who knows? NFL's like, whatever. Okay, let's jump in. So Thursday night is NFL only. Friday night, NFL, Chiefs and Chargers, which has some Jim Harbaugh flair, which is always fun, playing out of the country. But Friday night, we got JMU at Louisville. Any quick thoughts on those? Gentlemen, what I want to do today, I want to run through 10 quick games, get quick thoughts, and then I want to talk about the big looming elephant in the room. JMU, Louisville, anything?
I see what you did there. Yeah, I love this matchup. I think it's a great Friday night matchup. Kudos to Louisville for playing one of the best G5 teams out there. Year two for Chesney and the Dukes. So excited to see and learn a little bit more about them. If this was if Louisville didn't have Brohm as head coach, I might have Louisville on upset alert. But they've done a nice job of winning games they need to win under Jeff Brohm.
Vince Morrow does in in-game interview or no? From Jeff Luby's, it could happen. You never know.
If you're Louisville, this is kind of the worst game to play because JMU is a very good team and could go in there and beat you if you're not right. But the average pollster, the average observer just said it's a Sun Belt team. We're not going to give them the credit that they probably deserve for beating a solid football squad in James Madison.
Jeff Rahm always scoring points. Take the over. Like 55 and a half there. That's going to be a fireworks show.
All right. Jumping to Saturday morning. I think a lot of America is hoping Texas gets right. San Jose State's coming in. I think a lot of America cheers for Arch, to be honest. I know that people like to bash the expectations and all that stuff. I thought that was ridiculous. You had these yo-yos. Arch didn't play anybody in high school. Arch played the same dudes that Peyton played, that Eli Payne played, that Odell Beckham played, that Scott Russell played. I mean, come on. It's ridiculous. Okay, so we want to see Arch get right. Arch gets right against San Jose State?
Yeah, I mean, you go back to that game, a lot of the advanced number, like Bill Connolly's number had Ohio State at a post-game win expectancy of 18%. Texas outgained Ohio State in the second half, 242-97. So to fight this fact that in some ways it felt like Ohio State won that game 50-0, you root the quarterback, Texas was better than Ohio State. So as long as Arch's eyes match his feet, they'll be fine. He just got to calm his brain down, and Texas should be fine.
Yeah, I think Texas will be fine. Look, it's a San Jose State's coming in not expecting to be 0-1 either. And I stayed up late watching that Central Michigan-San Jose State game last Friday night. Central Michigan guys telling me that they were scheduled to get back home to Mount Pleasant around 9 a.m. Saturday morning. So that's some absolutely brutal cross-country travel there. But Central Michigan was able to power San Jose State. I had not expected that. They weren't beautiful on offense, but they kept the ball a lot, and they pushed San Jose State around a lot. And I think Texas – will push San Jose State around a lot. And hopefully, to Zach's point about Arch having his eyes match his feet and all of that, also let's hope he gets a little bit more help from the play caller in some goal-to-go situations and inside the red zone. Because we can blame Arch, and that's fine, but coaches didn't do him a great number of favors last week either.
I think Arch puts up 40. I think Texas scores 40 easily. Moving right along.
Does Arch throw for 300 yards? I feel like Arch gets right and throws for 300 plus.
Wow.
I don't know if it's 300, but he's going to throw for a bunch. Yeah.
All right.
It wouldn't shock me if he did. 250, 240, who knows? I don't think Arch is necessarily looking for all that. I think he's just looking for big wins, big wins, big wins. Anyway, however they come. ILL is at Duke. I think Illinois is very good this season, and I think Illinois is going to win that game. At Duke is no pushover. Any quick thoughts on that one, gentlemen?
Yeah, I mean, big game you noted it, and the expectations are a little bit more at Duke right now because of what they did last year and because of the money that Duke is investing in NIL and not just on the basketball hardwood. So to me, it's continuing to see how Duke's new quarterback does. I think Illinois is good. I'm picking Illinois to win, but it better not be a blowout or Duke's going to have, you know, some more troubles as the season unfolds.
Iowa? Is that Iowa State? Cyhawk. Thoughts?
If Kirk fails – go ahead, Zach.
Go ahead, John. No, I was just going to say, I wish I had the numbers in front of me, but it feels like the last 65 Cyhawk games were one-score games, and I expect this one to be the same. To me, this one is all about Iowa's quarterback, Mark Gronowski. If they're going to make that playoff run that one of us predicted, you got to throw it for more than 44 yards or whatever he did in week one. We know Iowa State's got a winner at quarterback in Rocco Beck, so they need to match Iowa. If quarterback play is a stalemate in this game, then I like Iowa to win. But if not, then Iowa State will pull off the home upset.
If Kirk Ferentz wins this game, he will become the Big Ten's all-time winningest coach at any program. So that's fairly significant. The other thing is, as close as this series has been, Iowa has dominated when it's been at Iowa State. I think I saw that maybe Iowa State has not won this game at home since like 2015 or something. It's been a really long time. So just a little note to consider there. I think it's another one possession game. And I know Iowa folks were really fired up about Gronowski. He's played enough ball that he should bounce back from last week when he didn't throw the ball well, did some things with his legs, but did not throw the ball well at all. But I'm excited. This is probably the game I'm just about most excited for this weekend.
So two quick notes. Yeah. 2011 was the last time Iowa State beat Iowa in their home stadium.
There you go.
I said home upset. Iowa State's actually a three-and-a-half-point favorite in this game.
I'll tell you the game I think I'm most excited for, and this is going to sound just bizarre as can be, is Kansas-Missouri. I think that's going to be a really, really good football game. That's next on my slate. I think Drink is a really good football coach. Obviously, Lance Leipold is as well. Lance's team just Donkey Konged was it Fresno State early. And then Fresno, I got to watch them in their week one game, their second game, and they were legit. So now I'm like, man, how good is Kansas? And I'm excited to see it.
That game is remarkable for the hatred. Those two programs and universities absolutely hate each other. And for our listeners, if you get bored, just scroll some KU and Missouri fan Twitter. But don't do it around your kids. But scroll it because the vitriol is real, man. A bunch of ne'er-do-wells in those two programs as it relates to each other. So, yeah, that's a good one as well. Like, if that one was played every year and had the buildup of Iowa State, I would probably be right there with you, Scott. I am excited for that matchup because, as you noted, Fresno got worked by Kansas, and then they absolutely put it on Georgia Southern. And yeah. I picked Fresno, but I thought it would be close, and it was not close. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this Clay Helton's been at Georgia Southern 4 or 5 years now. This is supposed to be an established program. It's year one for Matt Entz. And he worked them. So this one, Kansas wins this game. That's a huge feather in its Jayhawk cap and would be someone else kind of like Utah that I consider a Big 12 front runner.
Yeah, I mean, last year so much focus was on that the renewal of the Texas-Texas A&M rivalry. Kansas and Missouri hate each other every bit and more so than UT and A&M do. Like this one is – enormous stakes on both sides. Missouri's won a lot of games under Drink, but how many of those wins are those that you really feather in your cap type wins? They beat Oklahoma last year, longtime rival. Oklahoma's not one very good. They beat Arkansas, who's a newish rival. Arkansas wasn't very good. We all think this Kansas seems pretty good. So a win here would mean a lot for both sides.
All right. I'm a Southerner through and through. Explain to me why Kansas and Missouri hate each other.
Well, it starts with the fact that they fought a war against each other in pre-Civil War.
He's not even kidding.
No.
Yeah, no. This goes back to pre-Civil War, slave state, free state. I mean, we could go super deep, but they literally fought a war against each other, and then they have – obviously, they share the city of Kansas City, which is literally the most biggest city in both states. So it's very much a brotherly rivalry here.
The chatter that's been online this week around this rivalry has really kind of stoked the fires, because if we were sitting here talking about the top 50 or 75 college football rivalries, among the four of us, none of us are mentioning Kansas-Missouri, probably until we see all the chatter this week. So definitely rivalry week, and college football is back.
I love it. All right, so I'm going chronologically throughout the day. Kansas-Missouri is like 2:30, 3 o'clock, somewhere in there. Right in that same kind of time slot is a weird game that I think has implications on things in real life. UAB is at Navy, and I think Navy might just work them. I mean, work them bad. And I think that has implications on Trent Dilfer, personally.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, Trent Dilfer has to win 6 games minimum this year to keep going at UAB, and they were darn lucky to beat Alabama A&M last week.
Alabama State.
Great, my bad. Alabama State. By the way, bet you money right now that Alabama State quarterback is not an Alabama State quarterback in 2026. I bet he's an FBS quarterback. So,
I'm just gonna move right along from that one. Okay, equally interesting. North Carolina, coached by is playing at Charlotte, and goodness, they can't lose that game. But could they lose that game?
I doubt it.
I mean, yeah, matchup of two first-year head coaches. Tim Elvin has put together a really good staff, and Bill Belichick coming off. He's still got some blood in his mouth probably from the beating that they took. So it might be closer than we think, but you got to think North Carolina prevails there.
You don't think?
I'll tell you this: if I'm starting a college football program from scratch today, and I have the choice of head coaches, I'm choosing Tim Albin to coach my team before I'm choosing Bill Belichick.
Yeah, at the college level, I would agree. And Doug, you don't think Jordan Hudson would have dabbed up all that blood by this point in time? I do.
Yeah, maybe. If she wasn't working on gold digger jewelry line, yeah, then she had some extra time on her hands, maybe.
North Carolina is a 13.5 point favorite. I think I like Charlotte against the number.
My concern there, Zach, is Charlotte only scored 11 last week against App State. So while I think they'll build and get that to be a stable program, I'm not sure how many arrows they've got in the quiver.
Based off what I saw, I'd take App State's defense over UNC's.
Wow. Okay. Got Loggins, year one with a good defense. Let's go.
Zach, I would pause on your statement that if you were starting a college football team, you would take Tim Elvin over Bill Belichick. If Michael Lombardi is your GM, you'd take Elvin. I understand that. I understand that. But if you were just flying a guy in to coach an existing team in 1 week, I'd take Bill Belichick all day long. The problem is they had to build the team and the talent evaluation and the understanding what the college game needs. That's where Bill's team is out of sync, in my opinion.
Yeah, if it's a one game and my life depends on it, it's a different question. But if I'm starting a program, you don't just get Bill. You get Bill and his whole his posse.
Yes, understood. All right, let's go to a big one. Michigan is going to Norman, playing OU. Zach, give me some thoughts on that one.
I'd be lying if I knew what to expect in this game. I do know that Oklahoma ran for like 113 yards against Illinois State. The word out of Norman is we're not worried about it because we're missing some offensive line guys. We expect to have these guys back and we'll be fine. Okay, well, two of those guys that they didn't have were true freshmen. And if you're counting on true freshmen to go push Michigan's defenders around, I don't know. And also Oklahoma, since Brent Venables got there, it seems like they're two different programs. Like the defense is consistently healthier, bigger, faster, meaner, stronger than the offense is. So injuries on offense have been a consistent thing with Oklahoma. So I don't think it's one of the things. I think they're whistling past the graveyard to think, yeah, we'll get these guys back. We'll be right. John Mateer put up some good numbers against Illinois State, but he had to throw the ball 37 times to get to those good numbers. Bryce Underwood really, really liked what I saw from him against New Mexico, but I'm obviously judging on a curve because he's a true freshman making his first start against New Mexico. Brent Venables is going to throw some stuff at him that he's never seen before. It's not going to be on film. If I was betting this game, I'd take the under.
Mm-hmm.
Sports gun to my head, I'd pick Oklahoma to win because it's at home. But I have no idea what to truly expect from this game. Like I could see Michigan just pushing Oklahoma around and trying to win at 17-14 as well.
What about you?
Yeah, I mean, to me, that this is Bryce Underwood and John Mateer. Like you've got a veteran quarterback that's got a bunch of snaps, and you've got a true freshman, super talented guy. I think Chip Lindsey and Steve Casula last week against New Mexico did a really nice job pairing their play action. Their best runs with play action concepts to help make things simpler for Underwood. And, you know, his freshman debut, I expect that to continue this week to kind of limit his, what he has to read defensively and maybe a little bit more play action to help him get into a rhythm and take some of the short consistent throws instead of having to make full field reads and progressions.
You say, Zach, that Venables is going to throw some stuff at Underwood. I feel quite certain Wink Martindale will throw some stuff as well at John Mateer. And John Mateer, for all the success he had at Wazoo, didn't face a lot of quality defenses, the ilk of the Big Ten. And this is certainly one of those defenses that I think will be about as good as any in the Big Ten, despite losing a number of players to the NFL. The question I have for you, especially, Zach, because you know the landscape in that region and football so well, how significant is this game as an opportunity contest for Brent Venables?
It's enormous. It's not one of those games to where we look back in November and be like, well, you know, he beat Michigan, so all's forgiven. But his tenure is, I would say, it's safe to say, is very much teetering on the razor's edge, and it could go either way. And if you win this one, you have a great opportunity to be 5-0 heading into Dallas, because you do get Auburn, but it's at home. And you have the opportunity to create the kind of momentum you need within your fan base, within your own locker room and recruiting to really stand up on your feet and be established. You lose this one, you're like, okay, well, if we can't beat Michigan at home with a true freshman, how confident can we be about beating Auburn, beating Texas, and then the second half of the season, we'll deal with that when it gets here. But I mean, you win this one, you're thinking, all right, 5-1, even 6-0 is a real possibility. You lose it, you're like, okay, we could be 3-3 and truly fighting for our lives, starting to keep our necks above water here. So in terms of momentum and vibes, it's the biggest game Brent Venables has coached so far at Oklahoma.
I think I'm on OU on that one. School that's in Los Angeles, UCLA, is, I think, at UNLV. I think the line's almost nil. I think UCLA is a very, very small favorite. Thoughts on that one, gentlemen?
My thought is it would be pretty damn hard for UCLA to look worse than it did last week. Holy moly. I mean, they did not belong on the field with Utah last week, in every sense of the word, from the headsets down. Like, that was a complete mismatch. And Mullen's a fine coach. This will be UCLA will be hard-pressed to win this contest.
And the weird thing is UCLA is favored over UNLV.
2.5.
UNLV, I'm pretty sure.
UCLA is not going to go winless this season, certainly, but it's hard to feel confident in them beating – any single team on their schedule right now that's an FBS opponent, especially with the way Utah just went in there and just big brothered them.
They've got UNLV, New Mexico, Northwestern, and then Penn State. So it's, I mean, should be very, very winnable games, and then Penn State is going to slap them back into reality.
Good times. All right, the elephant in the room. Louisiana Monroe's coming to town, boys.
See what you did there.
Thank you.
I like that. Well done.
Okay, let's just entertain the possibility.
All right, give it to me.
What happens if Alabama loses this game?
I mean, that is the elephant in the room, straight up. It has happened before, which is stunning.
That was Saban's year one.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Is he coaching game three? Whoever that's against, I don't know who that's against, if they lose this game.
Yes, he is. It would be devastating to their psyche. I don't think Greg Byrne throws in the towel on the head coach because it's an indictment of Greg Byrne if he did that. So I think there would be other changes within the staff. I don't think it would be the head coach.
Guys, it is the year 2025, and we're talking about a possible ULM upset over Alabama. I mean, we live in a wild, wild world.
I'm not talking about a possible. I think
Alabama. No, yeah.
Right.
Alabama's going to win.
Zach was just saying, if it happened, then what?
Which means we're talking about it.
We're technically still in summer, and you're ushering in nuclear winter. Get out of here.
All right. So how do they get right? I mean, what we all saw with our own eyes in that game was apathy.
It wasn't a warrior mentality. Yeah, I saw dudes turn down tackles. That's probably what bothered me the most is that, like, that Alabama was good for an extra 1 to 2 wins per year because of Nick Saban sheer willed them to those victories. And it might not have been a sheer will victory against Texas or whomever. It was just a game that they didn't play their best, and Nick Saban would not allow them to compromise on the things that are non-compromisable. And we are seeing Alabama, I think, compromise on elements that should not be available for compromise, and particularly running to and through the ball and turning down tackles.
Here's how I view it. I read a piece this week about how the boosters are chirping because they don't like how Kalen DeBoer acts at press conferences. They don't like his demeanor on the sidelines. They didn't like that he wore a T-shirt for the Vanderbilt game on the sidelines. All of that is downstream from the fact that they don't like that he's not winning.
Of course,
if Alabama went 11-1 last year and then they won the Florida State game, all of these negatives would be positives. You know, it's great that he's more low key than Saban. That he's an even keel. If they were losing and he was a tyrant, it'd be like, well, he's just trying to be Nick Saban. So all of this stuff, none of this stuff is being talked about if they're winning. So my advice to Kalen DeBoer is you can't be anyone other than yourself. There's a reason you're the head coach at Alabama. You got to go be yourself. You can't try and be Nick Saban 2.0. That's just going to get you further into the hole. So what you got to do is you just got to win football games. And you have to hold players accountable. It seems like by the way they played in August or in week one, it seemed like accountability has been lacking. But you've got to bring accountability to your players, but you also have to be yourself. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But the only way out of this is through it.
We just got to get some offensive line push. Need some linebackers to come downhill and hit people.
And their D-line.
Take the dog, like, two people. Like,
yeah, the Tide D-line, which has been a hallmark since Saban got there, was not what any of us, I don't think, have become accustomed to as it pertains to that program. They've had a key injury up front, and they might have had another one this week, I think I saw, but to a third-year guy along the defensive interior. So that's another blow not needed. But, yeah, what's their identity right now? I think that's the question.
I mean, you guys mentioned the D-line. Certainly these guys probably aren't playing as crisp and as hard as they possibly can, which is obviously an indictment on the coaching staff. But it's also possible these guys just aren't as good as we thought they were. This is a team that's ranked number 2 in the talent composite. But maybe these guys maybe we overrated Alabama's talent. If that's the case, Quinn Williams isn't walking through that door. Marcel Darius, Dante Hightower aren't walking through that door. That's something you can't get out of this season.
What I saw with my eyes against Florida State were guys who had just quit. They looked pretty good. They looked like they had the talent in them. They just weren't running to the ball. They weren't willing to meet that blocker up in the hole. They were going to catch him about 2 or 3 yards back and kind of see what happened with the play. To me, that's not a lack of talent. That's lack of will, desire.
It's the identity.
The process.
I think it comes back to identity, right? The Nick Saban teams were super disciplined. They're going to fly to the football. They're going to be super physical. And from all indications from, you know, coaches and you know, the chatter on the internet is that that's just not who Kalen DeBoer is. Like you one of the most successful coaches in college football history leaves, and you've got a completely new dynamic coming in where he's finesse and throw the football around, and it just hasn't matched up great. It hasn't been a great fit. I do think his Washington teams played very, very hard, and you don't win as many games as Kalen DeBoer has without playing really, really hard. But that expectation, it doesn't seem, has leaked into the defensive side of the ball, where guys kind of jog into the football and getting dominated at the point of attack. Right. They're supposed to get running back Jam Miller, and I know the Tim Keenan defensive tackle is supposed to get back by the Georgia game. But at Alabama, you can no longer look past week 2 and 3 to Georgia whenever that's coming up on the schedule. It's you've got to win one game a week from here on out to get the heat off. So identity is their big issue right now. I don't think they know who they are, and no one watching them recognizes the Crimson Tide.
Yeah.
So Alabama has obviously ULM Saturday, home against Wisconsin, off, and then at Georgia on the 27th.
Wisconsin played better than I thought they would in week one, for what it's worth. Be interesting to see how they progress, especially with the backup quarterback, basically. Gentlemen, great times. I will offer 30 seconds each. Anybody have another game they want to bring up real fast? And then we're out.
Yes. I have one. Go. Go ahead, John.
I want to bring up Ohio hosting West Virginia this weekend. A bizarre. Those two teams are not separated by a whole lot of real estate. And Ohio fans have been talking about this game since I was there in spring for our behind-the-scenes feature at Football Scoop that was all access with that new coaching staff. Ohio didn't look terrible last week against Rutgers. West Virginia looked really good in the Rich Rod debut part due.
In the second half. The first half, they were slow. Sorry.
Right. So that's a low-key, sneaky good game this weekend that I will be paying pretty close attention to.
Zach?
We've talked about underrated rivalries. Texas State at UTSA. Don't sleep on that one. It's the seventh all-time meeting between these schools. UTSA leads the all-time series 5-1. Ignore that. These are two very good football teams. These universities have a lot in common. They're only about an hour apart. There's a lot of they compete for players. They compete for students. These schools have a lot in common. Some might say one thing they have in common is all their students wish they went to UT or A&M. I am not saying that. Others say that. But G.J. Kinney came out and said, I don't know how this game isn't on ESPN this week. I think it might be because of some stupid tennis tournament going on in New York. Regardless, I agree with him. This game should be on regular TV.
Question for you on that one. I see Texas State, the president of the university, rides his motorcycle up before all home games. Does he do that before all games?
It would be extremely Texas State for him to ride his motorcycle onto the Alamo Dome turf.
Let's do it, baby. Hey, let me toss out two more quick ones. I won't spend 30 seconds on them. Longtime ACC programs, Virginia and North Carolina State, meet this weekend. It does not count in the ACC standings. You heard me. Virginia, NC State meet. It does not count in the ACC standings. That one is significant. And then the other one I just had right here. Gosh, where did it go? That was my guess, my main one. I don't know. Wow. Ole Miss, Kentucky. Ole Miss, Kentucky. I can't believe we didn't discuss that game.
I had it on my list. It's right there. I just went right by it somehow. Amazing.
Yeah. The anniversary of Kentucky's lone SEC win a year ago.
Yeah, I think Ole Miss gets them pretty good this year. Ole Miss offense looked good. Kentucky looked okay. Anyway,
I've got to mention Arizona State at Mississippi State. That should be a good one. I know Kenny Dillingham said they were staying an hour and a half out of Starkville, and I know that Scott is a noted big proponent of the city of Stark Vegas. So that's one that I'm going to be looking at. I know Jeff Lebby and the crew got a win last week beating Southern Miss. So 2-1-0 programs facing off that, you know, has the potential to be interesting.
A key funny piece of SEC geography for you here that nobody knows is that the two SEC programs that are closest to one another are the University of Alabama and Mississippi State University. I knew that. They're only like 70 miles apart on a 2-lane state highway.
100% I knew that. Driven that road many a time. For real. Gentlemen, always a pleasure. You guys drop nuggets, and I love it. Looking forward to watching games with you guys this weekend, and we'll be back Sunday morning. Tell your friends. We thoroughly love Football Scoop Podcast. Happy to do it.